deers and the antelopes used to...
Welcome, welcome, time travelers. This is DJ Throwback here on Penguin Radio. This is the rewind from 8 to 9 tonight on this hot Thursday in San Rafael. We are going to start some things off here with this first segment. This first segment of the night is a segment I like to call Then and Now. This segment is about celebrities, any artist, pretty much just famous people from back in the day, and discuss a little bit of where they are now. So my subject for this week is Gwen Stefani. Now her name is Gwen Renee Stefani, and she was born October 3rd, 1969 in Fullerton, California. She grew up in Anaheim, California though, and was raised in a Roman Catholic household. Attended Laura High School in Anaheim, and it's funny, her name, she actually was named after a stewardess in the 1968 novel Airport. Her middle name, Renee, actually comes from the Four Tops, which was a group back in the 60s, and their 1968 cover of the Left Banks' 1966 hit song, Walk Away Renee. Her father's name was Dennis Stefani, and he was an Italian-American man working for marketing. And her mother was named Patty Niflin Stefani. She was Irish, Scottish, and Norwegian descent. And she worked as an accountant, but later, in Stefani's later age, she became a housewife. So her parents were big fans of folk music and exposed her to lots of great artists such as Bob Dylan and Emilio Harris. Gwen Stefani is the second oldest of four children. She has a younger sister named Jill, a younger brother named Todd, and an older brother named Eric. So Gwen Stefani was surrounded by many women in her family who happened to be seamstresses, and as a result, many of her clothes was actually made by her aunts, cousins, or even her mother. At school, she found school a little hard, and especially writing, because she was diagnosed with dyslexia. As a child, Stefani's musical interests consisted of musicals such as like The Sound of Music and Evita. And after making a demo mixtape for her father back when she was in high school, he encouraged her to take up music lessons to train her loopy, unpredictable voice, in his words. She made her first onstage debut during a talent show at Lorara High School talent show, where she sang the song I Have Confidence from The Sound of Music in also a self-made sewn tweed dress inspired by the one from the film that Maria wore. Stefani was also on the Lorara swim team, and she joined the team actually as an attempt to lose weight, which I found pretty shocking because Gwen Stefani is a pretty good health and is in good physique. You know, she's not overweight from what I've seen, but I don't know. I mean, maybe when she was younger, she could have been overweight. She started working at a Dairy Queen in high school and later started working at the Mac counter in a department store. She graduated from high school in 1987 and began to attend Fullerton College, to which she transferred to Cal State Fullerton. Her older brother was named Eric, and he introduced her to a two-tone music by Madness and the Selector in 1986. He invited her to provide the vocals in his group, which was a ska band called No Doubt. And in 1991, the band signed to Interscope Records and released their first self-titled album in 1992. It was more of a ska pop sound, but it did not do as great as the group had hoped. It was not a very big success. But before the mainstream success of No Doubt and Sublime, another band from the 90s, a ska band. Stefani contributed guest vocals to one of Sublime's actual hits, which was called Saw Red, on their 1994 album Robin the Hood. She rejected the aggressiveness of the female grunge artist and cited Blondie singer Debbie Harry's combination of power and sex appeal as a major influence in her life and her fashion sense. No Doubt also released their third album called Tragic Kingdom, which followed the self-released album. The Beacon Street collection took more than 3 years to make, and five singles were released from the Tragic Kingdom, including Don't Speak, which led to the Hot 100 Airplay year-end chart for 1997. Stefani ended up leaving college for a semester in order to tour with No Doubt on their Tragic Kingdom tour. But she never returned when she only had 2.5 years left. The album had sold more than 16 million copies worldwide, and for that, they received several Grammy nominations in 1997 and in 1998. In late 2000s, Rolling Stone magazine named her the queen of confessional pop. No Doubt then released their less popular Return of Saturn in 2001, which expanded upon the new wave content focused on Stefani's often rocky relationship with her, at the time, the band Bush, their frontman Gavin Rosendale, and her overall insecurities, including the decision on settling down and even having a kid and just leaving the band. Now, No Doubt album in 2001 was released called Rock Steady, and then explored more of a reggae dance hall kind of sound and received a lot of positive reviews. It also generated high single positions on the charts, with singles such as Hey Baby and Underneath It All. It even received some Grammy awards. Now, her older brother Eric was the one who started the band, and he did play the keyboardist. He was the keyboardist for the group. But he left the band in order to pursue in a career in animation on the hit television animated show The Simpsons. So, Gwen and Gavin Rosendale were married in September 14th of 2002, where she released, short after, was her first solo album called Love Music Baby in November of 2004. The album featured a large number of collaborations with producers and other artists, including Tony Kanal, Tom Rothrock, Linda Perry, Andre 3000, Nelly Hopper, The Neptunes, and New Order. She also created the album to modernize music, like what she listened to back when she was in high school. You know, she listened to Blondie and a bunch of great 80s jams back in high school, and now she's making her own kind of twist on them. Love Angel Music Baby takes influences from 80s and early 90s, new wave and electro music. The first single released was What Are You Waiting For?, which charted 47 on the US top 10 charts. The song served to explain why Stefani produced a solo album and discusses her fears in leaving the group, No Doubt, for her own solo career, as well as her desires to have a baby. The second single off the album was Rich Girl, and it was a duet with the rapper Eve and produced by Dr. Dre. It's an adaptation of the 1990s pop song by the British musicians Luigi Liu and Michi One, which itself is a very loose cover lyrically, but closer with a closer melody of If I Were a Rich Man from the musical Fiddler on the Roof. Rich Girl provided success for Stefani, and where she reached the top 10 of the US charts. Her third single, though, became her first number one hit on the Billboard charts. This single was called Holla Back Girl, and it happened to be the first US digital download to sell more than 1 million copies legally. Wow. You know, all those others don't count. So this song remained popular all the way throughout 2005, where the fourth single was released off the album called Cool. And it was pretty popular as well. It hit the top 20s in the US charts as well. And this song lyrics had accompanied a music video which talked about her Gwen Stefani's former relationships with Canal. The fifth studio album, or fifth single released off of the album, was Crash, which was released in early 2006. And this was postponed, she had to postpone her world tour, the Love Angel Music Baby tour, because she was pregnant with her first beautiful son, who was born on May 26, 2006. His name is Kingston James McGregor Rosendale. But earlier that year, in 2004, she showed interest in filmmaking, and she started auditioning for films such as Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But she made her debut playing Jean Harlow in Martin Scorsese's The Aviator in 2004. She released her second solo album in December of 2006, where she re-collaborated with Canal, Perry, and the Neptunes, as well as new collaborations with Akon, Tim Rice Oakley from the English band Kane. So the album focused more heavily on this electronic dance music for clubs, which wasn't really the main point of her Love Angel Music Baby album, which was released before. The lead single from this album was called Wind It Up, which was really highly noticed by the critics because of the use of yodeling and the interpolation of the sound of music. But it was a moderately successful song. It only reached, like, you know, the top 10 on the US top 20 charts for the most played song ever. So this helped to promote the Sweet Escape album. So she also started to mentor on season 6 of American Idol, where she performed the self-titled album off, or the self-titled single off of her album The Sweet Escape, along with artist Akon. This became Stefani's most successful song of her solo career. It even earned her a Grammy nomination for Best Pop Collaboration with Vocals. In order to continue to promote her album, the Sweet Escape Tour started, which was a worldwide tour that covered North America, Europe, Asia, the Pacific, and the Pacific part of Latin America. So with her promoting the Sweet Escape Tour, no doubt began working on a new album without their front girl. And the tour wasn't completed in 2008, and that was about the time the band started to make posts on Twitter concerning the progress of the album and they started talking about how Gwen Stefani had helped with the songwriting, but they had to postpone it even more because Stefani was pregnant with her second child, another little boy named Zuma Nesta Rock Rosendale. He was born on August 21st of 2008. In November of 2008, it was announced that No Doubt would be headlining the Bamboozle 2009 festival in May, along with Fall Out Boy. This band completed in a national tour in the summer of 2009. On June 11, 2012, No Doubt officially announced on Twitter that the new album would be released in September of 2012. Which would precede their first single that was released in July. The album was titled Push and Shove, and the single off the album was called Settle Down. In October of 2013, the band revealed that on Twitter that they were once again taking a nice break and hinting that they may possibly regroup in 2014. February 28th, 2014. Was the wonderful day that Stefani gave birth to her third baby boy. His name was Apollo Bowie Flynn Rosendale. Later that year in April, she made a surprise appearance at Coachella, where she joined Pharrell Williams on stage to perform her own version of Holla Back Girl. She and Williams are now coaches on The Voice for season 7. And in September of 2014, Stefani told MTV News during the New York Fashion Week that she is also working on another solo album as well as a No Doubt album. She revealed that she'll be working with Pharrell as well, and that her first single should be released, or her first single was released, excuse me, in 2014, October 20th, to be exact. So we have a lot of new music to look forward to from Gwen Stefani. I'm going to play you one of her songs right now. This was one of her first hit singles off of her self-titled, off of her first album, Love Angel Music Baby. This is DJ Throwback. You're listening to The Rewind. Stay tuned.
What an amazing time. What a family. How did the years go by? Now it's only me.
Welcome back, time travelers. This is DJ Throwback here on The Rewind from 8 to 9. We're heading into our second segment of the night. This segment's called I Played With That. And in this segment, I'll be talking about some toys and games that I personally played with as a kid or just that people played with back in the day. And this week I'm going to be featuring blow pens. Now, blow pens were created by John Adams, and what it is, it's a marker in a chamber that releases ink from the end of the marker when you blow into the pen chamber from the cap, which features like a nice spout which you can blow into. I remember having these and ordering them off the internet. I have a guest DJ here with me. This is DJ Short Steph. Say something to the lovely people, Short Steph.
Hello there. Salutations, my friends.
So, did you ever have blow pens?
Yes, I had like the entire kit.
You had an entire kit of blow pens?
I think so. Like, it had the case and then also the stencils and all the different colors and thingamabobs.
Yeah, I think blow pens were really cool. I think we ordered them off the infomercials, because they used to have infomercials back when we were kids, for blow pens. And I think my grandma actually got them for us, or my mom. I don't remember who bought them, but I just remember getting them and being so excited, because back in the day I wanted to be an artist and I loved drawing and anything with color. But I was just a creative kid. What about you, Short Steph? How was your experience with having blow pens?
I brought them everywhere with me. Like, I thought they were so much fun, but then I think towards like the middle or end of it, when I remember having them, they just became a mess. Honestly, like, I just find them like on my hands, like, I don't remember where this came from. Like, and it's all mixed around.
Yeah, I do remember that. They were pretty messy, and they never really showed that in like the example pictures.
Yeah, I hated that, because I remember like when you blow into it, like, and you've done it the same color for so long, you can see like the chamber fogging up and get all sweaty, and then it starts to like bleed through and like fall down on the paper and just messes up your creation masterpiece.
Yes, I do. I remember that. Yeah, it turned like the chamber, because the chamber is clear, so you could see what marker is in it. It started turning the chamber a different color, and it was really aggravating, because you're like, what if I wanted to put the purple one inside of this chamber and the yellow one stained it? It's going to make this brown color, and I don't want brown. I want purple.
It's just annoying.
It is annoying. It's just not fun. But what are you going to do? Blow pens are a thing of the past. Another toy that I'm bringing back out of the vault of old toys is the sticky hands. And what these sticky hands are is a series of... They actually... Did you know that they were like weapon toys? They had a game to them, and I didn't know this was a game. But what it is, it's there's six battle dome weapons that have the ability to steal a single piece of equipment from an opponent. The names appear are derived from the sticky hand toys that are sold in like vending machines. And the purple sticky hand toy was one of the gifts given out by the advent calendar, actually, which was really weird.
Yeah.
And actually, that was the first one to be retired, because everybody kept relating it to the advent calendar. Which,
what?
Yeah, it was a totally weird weird conspiracy about it, because they didn't want kids subjected to just the advent colors.
Because, like, the only time I remember, like, ever having them was getting them from Chuck E. Cheese's. When you get your tickets, turn it in, you get a prize, you get that, and that's all we did. We're just, like, throw it at the wall. That was it. That was the only game I knew.
Yeah, I totally thought it was weird. They had, like, this whole game wrapped around it. And so what it is you're supposed to steal somebody else's equipment using the sticky hands. And at the end of the battle, all the sticky hands and stolen pieces are returned to the original owners. But whoever has the most stolen pieces wins the game. I thought it was totally weird, because I just remember getting them from Chuck E. Cheese, like you said, for like a prize for playing all the token games. And just running around and sticking it to the window, because it looked really cool, because they were pretty clear and jelly looking. And you just stick them up against the window, and it was just like, whoa.
And then, like, after you've been using it all the time, you can see all the gunk collect on it, so it doesn't become sticky anymore.
Yes.
If they have the technology nowadays, remember that lint roller with sticky, and they just put it under water, and it becomes sticky again.
Yep.
That would be great.
I think I used to use that trick when I got older. I started remembering, just stick it in water to get all the yucky dust particles off, because you just stick them on everything. Those things would get lost, ripped, just tatered.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I was afraid with putting in water, because it'll lose its stickiness. That's why I didn't want to try.
I know. I completely agree with you. Like, just putting it in water and making it lose its sticky was just It didn't like...
It's not the same anymore.
No, it's not. It's not like when you first open it out of the package, it's like, new toy.
And it smells like a brand new toy.
Yeah, a rubber and plastic. Ooh, the best smells out there. So, I think kids should still play with sticky hands. What do you think?
That's a great like form of entertainment for like people with short attention spans.
Yeah, definitely. But I do remember these toys being a little dangerous because you'd slap other people with them too.
And then I remember like the parents would tell me, be careful because you might accidentally wrap it around someone's neck.
Yeah, because it had a long elastic string and then people were always scared of getting suffocated or something and having it thrown around somebody else's neck. You're like, okay, I'm a 6-year-old. I don't think about that, but okay.
I don't think it's like possible, honestly. I think it's like it's so thin.
I feel like if you stretch it out to its max capacity, it will rip.
That's it. I don't think it'll choke someone, but it will rip.
No. I mean, maybe swallowing it might choke you. That's about it.
Well, once they chew on it, it's like it doesn't taste like food, so they should spit it out.
Do not put sticky hands in your mouth, regardless of whether it's the rubber toy or your hands are sticky from something. Please do not put sticky hands in your mouth. Anyways, we're going to head into the third toy of the night. This toy is just a basic slinky. What a slinky is, it's pretty much a helical spring that was invented by Richard James in the early 1940s. It's named a slinky because it resembles a sleek and graceful flowing object. Richard actually was an engineer for the Marines, and he was working with trying to get some recoils into weaponry and aircrafts and all that. So since he was working with all those different recoils and springs, he actually found that this slinky moved like a wave and it was flowy and pretty. And he brought it home with himself, and his wife saw that he was kind of happy because he was depressed after the war and saw how happy he was playing with this toy. And so she said, oh, just keep it. And he felt so guilty bringing it home. But I thought it was totally funny because his wife was just like, it's a toy. Don't worry about it. Play with it. It makes you happy. So what? You stole a spring. It's like it was, you know, more. It wasn't like an important plans to build a nuke or something. Like, it's a spring toy. Really? That was the wife's mentality. And the dude's like, I'm going to get in trouble. In the end, he didn't get in trouble. He sold it to a toy company and... voila, now we have slinkies worldwide for children.
It's so simplistic, yeah, it could entertain you for hours.
Yeah, he noticed that it could like come downstairs, it walks if you walk it. It's totally cool. I think slinkies are awesome.
It's like a little pet dog. Yeah. But not.
Seriously, it definitely is. I remember that was another thing you used to get from Chuck E. Cheese. Is a slinky.
Then, because they're smaller. I remember this. It was a instead of metal ones, it'll be a plastic one. It was like multicolored ones.
Yeah.
I just kind of play with it. And
yeah, they sell them today at Toys R Us and Target and all that. They sell them all over the place in the toy section. They have them in plastic, and I think they started bringing back the old metal ones. It was like a retro throwback type thing.
Yeah, the dollar section of Target.
Yes. That's a glorious and dangerous place, ladies and gentlemen. But... I think slinkies are awesome toys. I hope that they stick around as long as they have. I don't know. I feel like a lot of toys phase out by the time they hit this the generation that's coming up. But slinky's just been that one thing that's kind of stick around.
Yeah. But I mean, like, if anything, if it does, like, fade out, there's, like, everything throws back. I mean, like, the fashion statements, like, let's see, jeggings, I guess, was the thing. They came back, or the 80s stuff, they came back. Like, eventually it would all come back in a little circle.
It's a full circle. History repeats itself.
What goes around comes around.
Exactly. I cannot agree with you, short stuff. That is perfectly put. Slinkies, a toy that will last throughout generations. Forever. All right, so we're pretty much done talking about toys here on The Rewind from 8 to 9. I'm DJ Throwback. You're listening to Penguin Radio. We're going to head to another break, and I'm going to play you some more Gwen Stefani. This song is called Holla Back Girl. Enjoy.
Like that, 'cause it ain't no holla back, girl. Ain't no holla back, girl. and you didn't think that I would hear it. People hear you talking like that, getting everybody fired up. So I'm ready to attack, gonna lead the pack, gonna get a touchdown, gonna take you out. That's right, put your pom-poms down, getting everybody fired up.
Welcome back, time travelers. This is DJ Throwback here. It is Throwback Thursday here at Penguin Radio on the Rewind from 8 to 9. I have a guest DJ here with me. This is DJ Shortstuff. Say something, Shortstuff.
Greetings, everyone.
All right. So we're heading into our third segment of the night. This segment is called Bring It Back. And in this segment, pretty much what we talk about is TV, movies, from back in the day that they probably don't play anymore on the internet, or on television, or on the Netflix, or anything really.
Unless it's like at midnight.
Yeah, I mean, you catch those late night shows that are throwbacks. But other than that, we're going to talk about some TVs first. The first TV show we're going to talk about is That's So Raven. This is an American supernatural teen sitcom TV series that debuted on Disney Channel back in January of 2013 and ended its run in November of 2007. This show is set in San Francisco and revolves the life of teenage Raven Baxter, played by Miss Raven Simone, and her friends Eddie, played by Orlando Brown, and Chelsea, played by Annalise Vanderpool. Her family also featured in the show. Her mother is Tanya Baxter, played by Takiya Crystal Keeman. And her father was Victor Baxter, played by Rondell Sheridan. Her little brother Corey also played a part in her mischievous little life. He was played by Mr. Kyle Massey. So the whole show pretty much revolves around Raven, and she happens to have psychic abilities. And they help her get into a lot of problems, and also she happens to want to be a fashion designer, so she comes up with a lot of great disguises in order to get out of some pre-adolescent and adolescent situations which she faces throughout her high school career. A lot of them have to do with, you know, boys asking the wrong girl out, or someone getting her brother maybe getting bullied, or, you know, someone just not wearing the right pair of pants to school. It ranges really from what Raven's trying to prevent from happening because she sees a vision. But I liked this show. The show ran for 4 seasons and only had 100 episodes, and I was sad to see it end, but at least it ended on a happy note. So, some funny things that I found really cool in the show was that Raven actually really touched up on a lot of problems that teenagers face today. She bagged on the whole sagging thing when her brother tried to do it. She said, "No, stop, you're not looking cool. What's cool about your underwear?" And I remember that being like a totally cool thing, because it was like, yeah, why do boys sag? Why do they think it's cool to wear their underwear outside their pants? Like, might as well not even wear pants at that point. And I thought it was really cool. She also had an episode where she was bagging on the skinny models and how nobody looks like the tabloids make them out to be, because everybody is normal and has their different body types. Just because they're not skinny doesn't mean they're not beautiful. She also touched up on how image isn't everything in the show. She always said, you know, just because she wants to be a fashion designer doesn't mean she can't design for everybody, and that everybody has their own fashion. Just because they don't like mine doesn't mean that they don't have their own style and sense of who they are. And I found that really cool. The whole Disney dynamic of we are awesome, we have to promote happiness in these children really came out in That's So Raven. So short stuff, do you remember watching That's So Raven?
Oh yeah, I have some few favorite episodes, especially with the Where the Boys in Motion.
Oh, the Boys in Motion, they were definitely the jam. They were cute too.
They give you Our Devotion.
Oh yeah, because they're the boys. The boys in motion, we give you our devotion, boys. We are the boys in motion, we give you our devotion. That's right. I totally forgot about the boys in motion. Jeez. That was their mock-up of like an NSYNC Backstreet Boys boy band coming to their high school for a contest type thing. It was pretty entertaining, you know, being an 8-year-old watching that going, a boy band came to the high school. I can't wait to go to high school.
I only freaked out because, like, the center guy, the Asian one, or Hispanic looking one, I only freaked out because I recognized him from another show. For those of you who don't know or don't, like, follow up on Power Rangers, he was in Power Rangers Galaxy Force. He was the Blue Ranger, and he happened to wear a lot of blue in the That's a Raven show.
I do.
Fun fact.
Yes, I do actually know that. I mean, I'm a big television buff, and I remember him being on the Power Rangers, and I knew he looked familiar, but couldn't quite pinpoint him until you said something. Thank you, Short Stuff. That was
love facts.
Vital information for your everyday life. But I do remember there were 2 catchphrases that Raven had collected pretty much when she started. Whenever she saw something disgusting, she go, "You're nasty." You're nasty. And then, and if ever she got in trouble, she go, "Oh, snap." And those were like the funniest things to hear as a kid. Whenever somebody would get in trouble, you go, "Oh, snap." I never tried that. I'm pretty sure I would have gotten really funny look from my parents if I would have gone, "Oh, snap," when I was getting in trouble. I'd have just been like, "What did you just say? Oh, snap." I would have just been like, "Okay, you need to stop watching TV. You're getting weird." But I think all in all, Raven Simone did an amazing job with this whole television series. Mm-hmm. She didn't fluctuate her weight and didn't let that like show in Raven in her portrayal of Raven on the television show. She always knew who she was and captivated her body image and didn't care what anybody else thought. And I thought that was a really cool thing to see on TV because, you know, normal people do gain weight and they also have a lot of fluctuations because when you hit puberty, your body does weird things. And I liked how Disney didn't make a big point of it to point it out on the constant.
Yeah. Another thing I liked about the show is that they also brought up social issues that so they show that they weren't afraid of doing. Because I remember this one episode when Chelsea and Raven try and get a job at the mall, but Chelsea got hired and Raven didn't. And I remember they did a whole undercover thing about it, and they got the manager fired.
Yeah, I remember hearing, like, it was a whole racial thing.
Yeah.
And I liked how they weren't scared to push the envelope a little bit with the boundaries that they had. set up for television. You know, they kind of like, hey, this is something that still happens to everyday people. It's not just something you see on TV. And they brought a lot of important things out like that. And I thought That's So Raven was actually a phenomenal show in doing that. They did a lot of stuff. They brought out a lot of social issues. I remember because Chelsea is a vegetarian, so she always would talk about saving the planet and
the trees, saving old Oki.
All the trees and all that. So, I mean, they brought up a lot of social problems that people knew about but didn't really do anything to fix or help. And I thought it was really cool. That's So Raven kind of pushed the envelope. So, is there any last words on That's So Raven?
Oh, feeling the love.
Oh, yes.
Corey's feeling the love.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody knows that when push comes to shove, nothing feels better than feeling the love. That's right. Raven's little brother, Corey, had started his own little band with a little friend of his named Stanley. And they sang a song called Feeling the Love. And Corey had a crush on Raven's friend, Chelsea. And that was a song he kind of dedicated to her and how he felt about her. And she was just kind of like, oh, that's so cute. Because, you know, it's her friend's little brother. But Corey was like, yes, I win.
I only remember from the episode when they did the audition, so I thought he liked that girl. And then she got kicked out because he got blinded by because she's hot. And then his mom ended up singing instead.
he had a crush on that girl, but he wrote the song for Chelsea.
Okay. Yeah,
because he did have a crush on Chelsea. And it was really funny.
It was. The moves he would pull on her is hilarious.
Oh, yes. Classic TV sitcoms. Little brother in love with the best friend is just... it's a prime thing. All right, so that's all we pretty much got for That's So Raven. We're going to head into the movie part of this segment. And the movie we're going to discuss this week is called Hook. And it's a 1991 American fantasy film written by Steven Spielberg. Directed by Steven Spielberg and written by James V. Hart and Malia Scott Marlowe. It stars Robin Williams as Peter Banning, also known as Peter Pan.
Ah, yeah. Fun.
Dustin Hoffman as Captain Hook. Oh. Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. Bob Hoskins as Mr. Schmee. Maggie Smith as Granny Wendy.
Maggie Smith.
Caroline Goodall as Moira Banning. And Charlie Carsmo as Jack Banning. So in this film, Peter Pan is known as Peter Banning, a successful corporate lawyer, while his wife, Moira, and his two children, Jack and Maggie, are all taking a trip back to London to go visit their grandma, Wendy, darling.
Oh.
And so he happens to fall upon his old enemy, Hook. When Hook kidnaps his children, Peter must return to Neverland and save Jack and Maggie. And along the way, he also reclaims his youthful self and spirit as Peter Pan. Now let's not forget Rufio, who was played by Dante Basco. And Rufio happened to be able to take over the Lost Boys after Peter left Neverland with Wendy. So that's what the whole story's about. I'll let you go out and explore it yourself. But short stuff, what is your experience watching Hook?
As you can tell by my reaction while you're reading it or saying it, it's like, oh my gosh. Because I remember first watching it, I was so confused with the storyline. Like at least in the plot beforehand, before it started happening. But then it makes so much more sense now, but... I remember watching it, I was like, it was kind of weird, but it was kind of cool at the same time. I remember I was a bit terrified, though, of Hook, because, I don't know, like, kidnap the children, I feel like, when you're watching, you're part of it, so I was like, he's going to kidnap me, I'm scared, I have to make sure I'm, like, safe.
Making sure Hook's not going to come in through your bedroom and take you away on his flying ship, the Jolly Roger.
You may never know, he could have, like, invisible cloak or something, like, snatch you, like, your parents can't find you, all these disastrous things.
All right. I think
my favorite part of the film was when Rufio came out and he was on that skateboard. It was the coolest thing, seeing the Lost Boys camp, because they had like a skate park, obstacle course, the boys were sleeping in tree houses. I was like, man, I want to be a Lost Boy. That sounds so much fun. No parents, just no worries. Just got to deal with some pirates every so often. It's an NBD, no big deal, bro. Like, and then you got this cool kid with a mohawk on a skateboard leading you throughout Neverland. Like, how dope is that?
My favorite, I remember, like, specific scene was, like, the food fight scene. Oh, I remember God. He was, like, Peter Pan was just, like, struggling just to, like, do it. Because, like, he's like, okay, just like, pretend you're eating air, pretend it's food. And then all of a sudden, he got his imagination back and boom, colorful blobs of whatever food it was.
Yeah, that was the... It just shows magic. It happens when you believe.
Believe.
I do believe in fairies. I do. That's another Peter Pan joke. Excuse me, sorry. But I think the entire movie was really well done. Robin Williams was the perfect cast for Peter Pan as an old and young Peter Pan. It was really cool seeing how the whole story after the original Peter Pan took place, because it was technically a sequel to the original Peter Pan.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually a book written. The sequel is a book written to sequel Peter Pan.
So there's a book called Hook.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes.
This is like this entire night is like all new information new for me.
The more you know, it's just the greatest thing. The internet, we have access to it.
Apparently I'm not searching well enough.
You're just not searching the right things. It's okay. I got you though.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. But Hook, I think, was a great movie. Rufio, man, he was really cool. I definitely digged his hair.
He was kind of cute.
Heck yeah, he was cute. He was really cute for when we were little.
Yeah.
But I think Hook was a really great movie. Steven Spielberg happens to be one of my favorite directors, so it was just another great thing to watch. So, any last words on Hook?
No, I think it's like a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it and add it to your Netflix thing. Mm-hmm. If it's not on Netflix, you can find it online.
Yeah, go to
Target.
If
you believe enough, you can find it.
Bangarang.
That's right.
So we're going to end off this third segment here on The Rewind with another great Gwen Stefani song. I'm DJ Throwback. You're listening to The Rewind here on Throwback Thursday, Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Here's some more Gwen Stefani. This song is called Cool.
You
All right, welcome back, time travelers. This is the rewind from 8 to 9 here on Throwback Thursday. So we're heading into our last and final segment of the night. This segment is called This Was My Jam. And in this segment, pretty much, we'll be talking about some old songs and bands or music groups that were popular back in the day and now not so much. But I still think they should be heard and listened to and just brought back a little bit. So this week, I'm going to spotlight a band called The Click Five. This is an American rock band. They started off in Boston, Massachusetts in 2003. It's composed of five guys: Ben Romans, Ethan Menzner, Joey Zur, Joe Geis, and Eric Dill. Their first album was called Greetings from the Irami House. And this first song I'm going to play for you guys is one of my personal favorites. This song is called Pop Princess. I loved listening to this song when I was a kid. It was like my little jam. Pop Princess. I felt like I was a pop princess whenever I heard this song. I'd jump around in my bedroom, on my bed, singing at the top of my lungs, just going, Pop Princess, make me smile. And I had a blast. So I hope you guys have a blast listening to this first song from the Click Five. This is DJ Throwback. Enjoy.
Crowd, you keep living like you're moving.
welcome back, time travelers. That was a little bit of the Click 5. So, I'm going to leave you with one more song from the Click 5. This song is called Just a Girl. And I am DJ Throwback. This has been the Rewind from 8 to 9 here on Throwback Thursday at Penguin Radio. radio.dominican.edu. Have a good night. Don't forget to tune in next week for my last and final show. Thank you all for listening. This is The Click 5 with Just the Girl. Enjoy.
She's cold and she's cruel, but she knows what she's doing. She pushed me in the pool at her last school reunion. She laughs at my dreams, but I dream about her laughter. Strange as it seems, she's the one I'm after. Cause she's bittersweet, she knocks me off of my feet, and I can't. Than an hour. She runs on 100 proof attitude power. And the more she ignores me, the more I adore her. What can I do? I do anything for her. Game.